This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Friday, June 18th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, family separation, detention, and deportation have all become common elements of the immigrant experience in the U.S. We'll hear from a visual artist raising awareness about these realities in a series of public artworks unveiling in Denver tonight. Saturday is Juneteenth. If you missed the special edition of Black Talk on a Public Affair on Wednesday, stay tuned for a segment of that discussion with Miss Opal Lee, the grandmother of Juneteenth. That's coming up. Also this weekend is the Colorado Brazil Fest. It's the largest festival of its kind in Colorado and organized by the Boulder Samba School. And we'll hear the latest entry in the Trends Diary. At 8:30 this morning, Connections comes your way. Today, their guest is Whitney Phillips, assistant professor of communication and rhetorical studies at Syracuse University. She's the author of three books, most recently, You Are Here, a field guide for navigating polarized speech, conspiracy theories, and our polluted media landscape. Then at 9:30, it's the Morning Sound Alternative, when you can start your weekend off right with an eclectic mix of music until noon. So keep your radio dial right where it is. And now, we'll start with the headlines. The U.S. Supreme Court once again issued a ruling to uphold the Affordable Care Act, or ACA, as it is written. The latest challenge was brought by Texas and other Republican-led states. Colorado was one of the states arguing in the ACA's defense. The health care measure has benefited an estimated 700,000 Coloradans with pre-existing conditions like cancer or diabetes, and another 400,000 more because of the expansion of Medicaid. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser said after the ruling that during the past year, the COVID-19 health emergency has highlighted just how crucial access to health care is, and that he is committed to fighting for access to health care, lowering the price of prescription drugs, and supporting enhanced mental health treatment and service opportunities. In other healthcare news, yesterday, Governor Jared Polis signed a bill known as the Colorado Insurance Option into law. Proponents say it will lower premiums, reduce out-of-pocket costs, and improve healthcare access and equity across the state. In a press release from the Colorado chapter of the Committee to Protect Healthcare, Dr. Carlos Franco Paredes, an infectious disease specialist in Denver, said that by focusing on the needs of underserved, underrepresented, and rural communities, quote, the Colorado option provides real financial savings for families and small businesses so they can afford to see a doctor and protections for hospitals that disproportionately serve uninsured individuals and people who rely on Medicare and Medicaid, unquote. The city of Loveland, Colorado, has hired a consulting firm to carry out an independent review of actions taken by police during the June 2020 arrest of 73-year-old Karen Garner on shoplifting charges. In April, an attorney for the Garner family released a video from the arrest of Garner, who suffers from dementia. The video shows the Loveland police officer who carried out the arrest knew he had dislocated her shoulder, but no medical help was offered for 6 hours. The consulting firm chosen by the city of Loveland is the same contracted by the Louisville Metro Police Department in the wake of the death of Breonna Taylor. According to the city government of Loveland, the firm provides assessments to dozens of other cities, institutions, and police departments throughout the country, including Denver and Boulder. The CU Board of Regents has approved a measure to increase tuition next calendar year. According to budget plans discussed last night, the cost of attending CU Boulder will increase by $500 a year each year for the next 3 years. The CU budget is contingent upon approval by the state legislature. Regents also voted last night against a measure that would have required all returning students to be vaccinated against COVID-19. In the weather forecast today, we're looking at a high of 94 degrees, mostly sunny skies, but with a chance of rain later tonight. No ozone action alert is in place for the Front Range today, unlike most of the days this week. Though hazy skies are likely statewide across Colorado due to smoke from wildfires in Arizona, New Mexico, and Utah. Outside our Boulder studios, it's 68 degrees. Tomorrow is Juneteenth, and we now bring you this segment of the Juneteenth special edition of Black Talk that aired in full on A Public Affair this Wednesday. Michelle Simpson, host of KGNU's Black Talk and senior instructor in the University of Colorado's Philosophy, Arts, and Culture Residential Academic Program, speaks to veteran activist Miss Opal Lee, also known as the grandmother of Juneteenth, about the origin of the Juneteenth holiday, her work to make it a national holiday, and why Juneteenth has value beyond the Black community.
I want to let you know that you're listening to KGNU. And my name is Michelle Simpson, and you are listening to a special edition of Black Talk. Again, Black Talk is a co-creation of the Boulder County NAACP and KGNU. And we are talking to the fabulous Miss Opal Lee, aka the grandmother of Juneteenth. And she is telling us about her experiences with Juneteenth and, again, what Juneteenth means and what it should mean to us and the entire country. Let's dive into Juneteenth a little bit more, because I'm guessing that we have a number of KGNU listeners out there who have no idea what Juneteenth is or how it came about. So can you fill us in a bit more on the history?
What the young folk need to know, and you know I always say anybody under 94 is a young person, okay?
Okay.
They need to know is that a General Gordon Granger made his way to Texas.
And that was Galveston, right?
Yeah, Galveston, Texas, with maybe 6,000-7,000 Black troops. And he had this General Order Number 3 that he read that said the enslaved were free. Now, I don't know how many places he mentioned it to, but he nailed it to the door of what's now Reedy Chapel African Methodist Episcopal Church. And when the people came in from their labor and somebody read that general order to them, we started celebrating, and we've been celebrating ever since.
Now, this particular thing, this particular order, though, and what makes Juneteenth, I think, so kind of interesting or intriguing to many. And for those who are not putting it together, Juneteenth is that combined word for June and 19th.
Okay? Yes.
Let me say that.
Yes.
But when we think about this, it took 2.5 years.
Yes, it did.
For enslaved Black folks in Texas to learn about their statutory freedom. And there are a lot of stories around why that happened or how that happened. What's your version of the story?
Well, for one thing, you need to know that on New Year's Eve, the enslaved, and we still have what's called watch night services.
Right. I'm familiar with it.
Watching and waiting for freedom, you know? Mm-hmm. We've had the stories about somebody coming after Abraham Lincoln gave the Emancipation Proclamation. Somebody coming on a mule to bring the news got killed. Other reasons are that the plantation owners knew it and the enslaved knew it. People coming from other places, they knew it, but they were waiting because there had to be some enforcement.
You got it.
You couldn't walk off that plantation, okay? And so when they did learn about it, I mean, the plantation owners were so mad and upset because this was their way of life.
Right.
And you were disturbing it. And they even whipped people who were celebrating their freedom.
Now, how long, Miss Opal, how long exactly have you been campaigning for the U.S. Congress to recognize Juneteenth as a national holiday?
Oh, girl, I've been talking Juneteenth. I've been, let's see, celebrating it for 40 years on this path of getting it made a national holiday about 20. And I don't see, I do see that this year we simply have to get the bills passed. And right here, if I could just say to your listeners that we've carried 1.5 million signatures to Congress this past September And we want to carry that many signatures to them again before June 2021.
Now, how will people be able to kind of sign their names on that petition if they're interested in doing so? How can they?
JuneteenthUS.com on their phone or their book or whatever. Okay. And they find the link that will let them sign, give us their signature. Then there's Opal's Walk to the number 2DC.com. You can go there. Those two places you can go. And sign and give us the signatures we need.
And we will definitely post that information on the website. So folks,
thank you. So I want people to, number one, know it's not a Texas thing. I want them to know it's not a Black thing. I want them to know that freedom is for all of us. Freedom is for all of us. And none of us, I'm going to repeat it, none of us are free until we are all free.
You can find a web post containing the full Black Talk episode with Miss Opal Lee at news.kgnu.org. That post has information about Boulder County's first annual Juneteenth celebration honoring Miss Lee, taking place this Saturday. Family separation, detention, and deportation have all become common elements of the immigrant experience in the U.S. and in Colorado. This afternoon, the Redline Contemporary Arts Center in Denver will be hosting an event to raise awareness of these local experiences and to unveil a series of public artworks. I spoke with documentary photographer and visual artist Jonathan DeCamps about the project.
What we are having is the unveiling of what is called the Phase 3 of Separated Family Public Art Project. That it's been spearheaded by the award-winning visual artist Michelle Angela Ortiz. And we're doing this in three different states, North Carolina, New Hampshire, and Colorado. And I am representing and supervising and collaborating with the project here in Colorado with the community of undocumented immigrants that have been victims of the detention centers at the Aurora Detention Center.
And how many people did you collaborate with? Were people who had been detained?
So we collaborated with three community members, two who are nowadays in sanctuary, one here in Denver and another one in Boulder, and another community member who's the head of the household, the father of the family, was deported.
And what's the significance of the term Phase 3?
Phase 3 is because on the first two phases, it was based in Philadelphia at the Berks Detention Center and in Pennsylvania. And there was a process where there was a documentation, and they did also public art in Philly, in Philadelphia. And they did it with families pertaining specifically in Pennsylvania. And now we have evolved in doing it different. One in Raleigh, North Carolina, another one in Dover, New Hampshire, and one here in Denver.
And these are large-scale portraits. Are they on the exterior walls of the gallery so anybody passing by can appreciate them, or is it part of an indoor gallery space?
Exactly. It's how you said first. It's going to be, we're going to have a large portrait. It's a collaboration with the artwork. It was my portraits and the artwork by Michelle Ortiz, the lead artist. And they're going to be 20 feet portraits that are going to be hanging outside of the Redline Contemporary Art Center. And yeah, people can look at it when they pass by. And they can read, because there will have excerpts of the stories and these QR codes that people can scan, and it will take you to the website where the story of each member is going to be more detailed, with documentaries, with pictures, with themselves telling the stories of what has happened within the detention center, their experience.
And what kind of a conversation, community conversation or awareness are you trying to raise through this art project?
So basically, we want to create awareness of what is happening still with the cases in the detention centers and deportations. There, at the federal level, there has been some leniency of the zero tolerance policy, but they still going at the same through the same measures to deport people and still detain them. So we're gonna have we're gonna have the presence of organizations like Sanctuary for All and also CIRC, which is the Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition. And that's the conversation that we want to bring, awareness and the story, so people can understand what is happening at these detention centers in the country.
Again, that event is at the Red Line Contemporary Arts Center in Denver. Doors open at 4 p.m. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. You may be noticing the slow but steady comeback of live music and even festivals. This weekend, the Colorado Brazil Fest comes to the Boulder Band Shell. It's the largest festival of its kind in Colorado and organized by the Boulder Samba School. KGNU's Rosana Longo caught up with Carl Dixon, music director from the local Bateria Alegria Ensemble, at a recent rehearsal.
Hey, Carl, how are you?
Hey.
Since you're practicing again, is there a new performance that's coming? Explain where we are right now.
Sure. This is a rehearsal of Bateria Alegria, the performing group of the Boulder Samba School. And we've been practicing outdoors now over the last year, and we're excited to be back together in a safe way.
This is so much fun. You are practicing because maybe there's an opportunity for a live performance?
So we have the Colorado Brazil Fest June 18th and 19th at the Boulder Band Shell, kind of a co-produced by the Dairy Center for the Arts. Yeah. So you're going to find more information about that at the coloradobrazilfest.org.
Carl, I would like to ask you, from your point of view, how has coronavirus affected art industry, and especially musicians like you, that are performing, that really get, you know, the vibe and the energy from an audience?
Right. There's a number of ways I think most performing artists, musicians, dancers, visual artists that normally perform for live audiences, definitely have all of us have missed very much the feeling of performing for an audience and getting feedback and connecting with the people that we collaborate with and perform together with. Also, a lot of us have suffered financially, losing kind of most of their income overnight a year ago, and some of that has been able to come back by this point, but not a lot. So a lot of performing artists have been impacted pretty severely with their careers and financially in the last year, and are really hoping to recover in the next year.
Do you think that musicians are coming together to form a group that will support each other a little more? Do you think that you guys are much more ready now to face these kind of uncertainties and difficulties?
It's interesting to see that evolve in different ways and on different levels. For the Boulder Samba School and the members of Bateria Alegria, many of us were able to meet and continue learning over the last year online, virtually, remotely, which is very challenging to have a drum ensemble learn together online. But many of us were able to do that, and that was a really special, helpful thing and a way to kind of stay connected to our community when we were all separated. And now that we have kind of gradually since the fall and continuing to now been able to play outdoors first in smaller groups and then with a larger group, it's really great to see this community of people stay connected with each other through this activity, even when a lot of their other communities have been impacted and it's harder to connect with human beings, good friends and colleagues and people that you perform with. So
there's nothing that can unite us more than art and music. Thank you so much for this opportunity. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longo.
Time now for Trends Diary, where Boulder County residents of all ages share personal experiences that relate to a pressing community need. The focus for now is on our shared need to connect and solve problems, despite the increased isolation we're all experiencing during the COVID-19 pandemic. This project is brought to you in partnership with Community Foundation Boulder County.
Dear Trends Diary, my name is Brendan Riley, and I'm the president of Boulder Wave, a company here in town that's been helping thousands of foreign athletes with their high-altitude training in Boulder since 1993. I was on a long walk in my South Boulder neighborhood the day the shots rang out at the King Supers, where I've shopped for the past 25 years. Often I return via the neighborhood behind the store, but after hearing of the shooting, I immediately returned home by a different direction. In the days that followed, numerous athletes sent me messages from Japan, checking on my welfare. I knew many of them from their visits to Boulder to train as world-class runners with Boulder Wave. The grocery store was where many of them did their weekly shopping in Boulder, as well as before and after track workouts at Fairview High School. Soon, I found myself typing a letter to my friends in Japan. I updated them on what had happened, thanked them for their kind messages of support, and offered two calls to action. I told them about the Run for Boulder Strong 10K Memorial Run that was encouraging Boulder's friends from around the world to do their own walk or run to show support for the victims' families. I also alerted them to a fundraising effort being organized by several of Japan's Olympic medalists and coaches. Many of these runners really look at Boulder as their American hometown. Under the name Boulder Strong Japan, these Olympians put together a crowdfunding campaign in Japan that began on April 20th and ran through May 31st. In the first few days, even before any publicity, they averaged about $800 to $1,000 in donations per day. All these proceeds will be donated to the Community Foundation's Crisis Fund. The Japan Boulder connection is long and deep, thanks to all the long-distance runners who have come here to train in the past three decades. This group comprises all household names in Japan, all of them with long histories of 25 years or more in Boulder. We have Olympic marathon medalists Yuko Arimori, Naoko Takahashi, and Mizuki Noguchi, a three-time Olympian Harumi Hiroyama, coaches Masa Takahashi, whose two children even graduated from CU, Tsutomu Hiroyama and Shogo Naganuma, and Tad Hayano, who is now the director of the world-class Tokyo Marathon. Nearly all of them have either owned Boulder County homes in the past or own homes now. In addition, 2009 World Championship Marathon silver medalist Yoshimi Ozaki, who now lives in Longmont, came with her husband to do the Run for Boulder Strong in person. I received an email from Tsutomu Hiroyama, who took care of the crowdfunding over in Japan. They had an original target to raise 1 million Japanese yen, which is just under $10,000, and they actually hit a final total of 2.1 million yen, which is closer to $20,000. All in, there were over 300 people participated in the crowdfunding in Japan.
Feeling inspired? Do you have your own story of making connections or solving problems during this time of physical isolation? Then visit www.commfound.org. Look for Trends Diary and share your experience with Community Foundation Boulder County. Your submission could wind up on these KGNU airwaves.
Thank you for listening to the Friday Morning Magazine on 88.5 KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I've been your host, Shannon Young.